Kuhn Review, Print Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @KuhnReview, that is @CUEANDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@kuhnreview.com. That is information@CUEANDREVIEW.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
This is from the Herald on Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2023. This is from the news section. The headline reads, 500 new jobs for drug testing sites in Glasgow and Stirling. This article is by Brian Donnelly. Around 500 jobs are to be created with the significant expansion of a major global life sciences company in Scotland. Merck, a German science and technology company, is investing €35 million, which is £30 million, in biosafety testing at its Glasgow and Stirling sites in response to increasing worldwide demand for biosafety testing for drug development and commercialisation. Biosafety testing is a critical step in the drug development and manufacturing process that ensures drugs are safe, efficacious and meet regulatory requirements. The expansion will bring Merck's workforce to over 1,200 employees across the two sites in Scotland. Dirk Lang, Head of Life Science Services at Merck Life Science, said, "We remain committed to ensuring the safety of the world's medicines through our state-of-the-art testing solutions for our customers around the world that drive new treatments. Since mid-2022, we have invested more than €350 million in our global testing network to meet the growing demand for these services. The centrepiece of the investment is a new 1,200 square metre facility in Glasgow, which will house molecular biology and sequencing services. The company is to expand testing capacity in its current buildings with biosafety testing, analytical development and viral clearance suites. The latest investment follows the company's recent Rockville, Maryland, US and Shanghai, China and testing expansions." David McClelland, site head and managing director for the Scottish site, said, "Merck has a wealth of testing expertise spanning over 75 years, including 33 years here in Scotland. The biosafety testing services at our site in Glasgow and Stirling have been experiencing double-digit growth for several years. This investment is a significant announcement for Merck in Scotland and an acknowledgement of the great work of our on-site teams. Its contribution to the fight against COVID-19 cut across diagnostics and therapeutics. The business performs more than 20,000 studies in the UK annually for more than 500 clients globally with its BioReliance testing services portfolio." Stuart Patrick, Chief Executive of the Glasgow Chamber of Commerce, said that the announcement is very good news for Glasgow and the surrounding region. He also said, "The success of the Merck team in building such a powerful presence in biosafety testing reinforces the growing importance of Glasgow as a hub for science and innovation built on an excellent pipeline of talented new staff. The health and life sciences industry will play a central role in shaping opportunities for a high-quality career in the city region, and Merck is showing how it's done." Stuart Armstrong, Chief Executive of the Scottish Life Sciences Association, said, "It is great news for Scottish life sciences and Scotland as a whole." He also said, "We are delighted to continue to support Merck as they expand again in Glasgow and Stirling. We will work alongside Merck to ensure they have all the resources they need to deliver a successful project. Making sure we have the skilled people to fill these jobs is a priority for us, and it is excellent to be working with Glasgow Caledonian University, Stirling University and Forth Valley College, amongst others, to ensure we have students graduating with more than just an appreciation of the world-class regulatory environment they'll be working in. by Reliance Contract Testing Services and the recently formed Millipore Services are part of the Life Sciences Services business unit, which together with the Process Solutions business is one of Merck's big three growth drivers. By 2025, these businesses are expected to generate approximately 80% of targeted sales. Merck is a Germany-founded company operating across life sciences, healthcare and electronics, with more than 64,000 employees globally. In 2022, Merck generated sales of €22.2 billion, £19.2 billion, in 66 countries. Its work includes providing products and services that accelerate the drug development and manufacturing, as well as discovering new ways to treat the most challenging diseases. The company said scientific exploration and responsible entrepreneurship have been key to Merck's technological and scientific advances. This is how Merck has thrived since its founding in 1668. Merck holds the global rights to the Merck name and brand. The only exceptions are the United States and Canada, where the business sectors of Merck operate as Millipore Sigma in life sciences and EMD Serono in healthcare and EMD Electronics in electronics. That article was by Brian Donnelly. This is from the Herald on Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2023. This is from the news section. The headline reads, Canic Wildfire. Wild campers may have sparked three-day blaze. This article is by Jody Harrison. A huge wildfire, which has been burning for 3 days, may have been sparked by holidaymakers' wild camping. Forestry Land Scotland, FLS, the government agency which manages forest and land, said the cause of the fire near the Highland village of Canic was associated with people camping out. The blaze broke out on Sunday and has continued to spread across the countryside, which has been dried to tinderbox conditions after days without rain. Fire crews remain at the scene this morning. Two firefighters were airlifted to hospital yesterday after they were injured when the vehicle they were travelling crashed. FLS said there had been a similar incident in Tensmuir Forest and Fife last Thursday when a campfire started a wildfire. FLS North Region Manager Alex McLeod told the Sun newspaper, many people are enjoying being out in the countryside to enjoy the hot weather, but the lack of rain recently has made much of the countryside tinderbox dry. Camping stoves are clearly recommended as being a better option than campfires, but when the weather has been as hot as it has and the ground is as dry as it is, neither are advisable. Regardless of how it started, this particular incident is a sobering reminder of how easily and quickly a wildfire can take hold and become a major problem. Visibility around the area is poor, with fire officers continuing to bring the blaze under control. The fire is spreading towards an area where there are wind turbines. It is understood a helicopter will be used with helping to douse the flames. Firefighters have used knapsack sprayers and beaters to monitor the area and control the fire spreading. Images put on social media by Ballantore Fire Station show apocalyptic scenes of scorched ground and billowing smoke. Almost 3,000 hectares had already been burned by the blaze around 2 p.m. on Tuesday. Wildfire monitoring expert Dr. Thomas Smith has warned the blaze has the potential to be Scotland's largest ever wildfire. That article was by Jody Harrison. This is from the Herald on Wednesday, the 31st of May, 2023. This is from the news section. The headline reads, Police Scotland. Officers fear grass label if they call out misogyny. This article is by Jody Harrison. Police Scotland officers who raise concerns about misogyny and sexism in the force fear being labelled a grass and feel they have a target on their back, a new report has found. It also said a boys' club culture exists in parts of the service where the real team meetings happen on the golf course. The Scottish Police Authority, the SPA, paper said colleagues often disguise or label sexist behaviour as banter, and if someone challenges or calls it out, they are seen as not being able to take a joke and are isolated from the team. It comes after Police Scotland Chief Constable Sir Ian Livingston last week admitted the force is institutionally racist and discriminatory. The new report contained the results of an anonymous online survey which got 528 responses and found that 81% agree sexism and misogyny is an issue in the force. The research carried out between August and October last year revealed 86% of female colleagues said they have either been subjected to and or witnessed sexism and misogyny. Respondents described having a target on your back when raising issues and grievances, being labelled a troublemaker and red marked during their career. Some expressed concerns about working conditions and a lack of support for flexible working plans and maternity and paternity leave. Others described being overlooked for promotion due to maternity leave and told they had forfeited their policing career by having families. The paper for the SPA People Committee said, for some colleagues, they have been made to feel that if they have children, they will no longer be able to do their job. The report said there have been particular improvements since the early 2000s, but there are still areas that need improvement. It said, colleagues need to feel safe to call out behaviours and feel supported when they do. Leadership must be inclusive, visible and accountable across the service to inspire positive change. It said the force must cultivate visible changes to ensure that a zero-tolerance approach to sexism and misogyny is the reality, adding, this plays an essential part in fostering confidence in colleagues that if they raise an issue, this will be addressed in appropriate and supportive ways. Women who have worked in the police have previously spoken out about their experiences, and former armed response officer Rona Malone last year won almost £1 million in compensation from the force after an employment tribunal ruled she was victimised while raising sexism concerns. Last week, Sir Ian said institutional racism, sexism, misogyny and discrimination exist, but the admission absolutely does not mean all officers and staff are racist, sexist or homophobic. He went on to say there is no place in Police Scotland for people who harbour prejudices, and the behaviour of colleagues who have been found to hold such views is utterly condemned. It came as a separate report found instances of ongoing discrimination against minoritised communities, including first-hand accounts of racism, sexism and homophobia by serving officers. Commenting on the new report, Assistant Chief Constable Emma Bond, led on the delivery of action to tackle sexism and misogyny, said, this was a crucial first step in understanding the extent of sexism and misogyny within our organisation. As the Chief Constable made clear, we know from independent reviews, court and conduct cases and from listening to our own officers and staff that people don't always get the service or experience from Police Scotland that they need and deserve. The onus is on us to enable people to make their voices heard and take action to address their concerns. Hearing these experiences has been difficult, in some instances shocking, but absolutely necessary. Women told us about everyday sexism, the banter, the boys' club, being overlooked for promotion, treated dismissively, regardless of experience, grade or rank, because you are a woman, or being told having children meant your career was over. Men also told us of witnessing sexism and misogyny, feeling disempowered and unable to step in, but also about their own experiences of sexism. However, people also told us that they are seeing progress and change, women leading at every level in policing, proactive steps to recruit more women and better support for flexible working. We are committed to building on this, to continue to listen, to change and become an inclusive, anti-discriminatory organisation that reflects and influences the communities we serve. That article was by Jodie Harrison.
This is from the Herald on Thursday, the 1st of June 2023, from the news section. Glasgow LEZ, new rules on emissions in force from today. This article is written by Gabriel Mackay. Glasgow's low emission zone comes into force today as councillors and ministers insist it will ensure more breathable air for Scotland's largest city. A last-ditch bid to force a judicial review into the policy was thrown out on Wednesday, ensuring that the LEZ would go ahead as planned. From today, 1st of June, all vehicles entering Glasgow's LEZ must meet the less polluting emission standards or face a penalty charge. The scheme is the first of its kind in Scotland and follows an initial bus-only phase which began in 2018. Councillor Angus Miller, convener for Climate and Transport, said, "I am proud that Glasgow has fully rolled out the first of Scotland's low emission zones, joining hundreds of cities across Europe who have introduced similar initiatives in ensuring cleaner, more breathable air. Glasgow has made great strides in tackling air pollution in recent years, thanks in no small part to the success of the first phase of our LEZ, which has led to all buses running through our city centre meeting the less polluting emission standards. But we still have stubbornly high air pollution levels in the city centre, which have been in breach of legal limits for decades now, and that poor air quality is actively harming Glaswegians' health, creating and exacerbating people's health conditions and the city's health inequalities, disproportionately affecting the most vulnerable. While the vast majority, up to 90%, of vehicles currently entering the city centre will be unaffected, the LEZ standards will address the small minority of vehicles which pollute the most, disproportionately creating the harmful concentrations of air pollution. And, by ensuring cleaner air, we can create a safer and more pleasant experience for everyone who lives, works and visits Glasgow city centre." Cabinet Secretary for Net Zero and Just Transition, Mari McAllen, said, "I'm pleased to welcome the wider enforcement of Scotland's first low-emission zone in Glasgow. Air pollution from vehicles disproportionately impacts the most vulnerable in our society. It causes the most damage to the youngest, the oldest, and people with pre-existing medical conditions. LEZs are an important tool in protecting the public health and improving air quality, while at the same time protecting our environment by reducing harmful emissions and encouraging a shift to more sustainable transport." With the LEZ enforcing buses since 2018, Glasgow has already seen improved air quality. "I look forward to welcoming further improvements in air quality through this wider enforcement, with Aberdeen, Dundee and Edinburgh following next year." Gareth Brown, Chair of Healthy Air Scotland and Policy and Public Affairs Officer, Asthma and Lung UK Scotland, added, "With one in five Scots developing a lung condition like asthma and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, in their lifetime, for them, air pollution can trigger life-threatening asthma attacks and flare-ups. Air pollution in Glasgow is shockingly 4.5 times the World Health Organization, WHO, levels, so it is clear that we need to make tackling air pollution a national priority, with low emission zones just the start. Our cities must be redesigned to be far healthier places, where people can walk and cycle and not forced to breathe in toxic levels of air." That article was written by Gabriel Mackay. This is from the Herald on Thursday, the 1st of June 2023, from the news section. Hospital at home, how it started, how it works, and who it helps. This article is written by Helen McArdle. What is hospital at home? In Scotland, hospital at home aims to reduce hospital admissions for elderly patients by enabling them to receive treatments at home that would otherwise require them to be admitted to hospital. This can include an intravenous drip or oxygen supply. It also provides access to hospital tests under the care of a consultant in their own home. Where did it start? The idea of hospital at home originated in the mid-1990s, following a pilot study into geriatric care led by US researchers and involving 17 patients, which concluded that it was feasible, safe and cost-effective. A larger evaluation from 2000 to 2002 found that hospital at home met disease-specific quality standards at rates similar to the acute hospital, and that the average patient length of stay was shorter and the overall costs were a third lower than an inpatient stay. In addition, patients treated at home were less likely to develop delirium or require sedatives, and family members reported feeling less stressed and more satisfied with care compared to those treated in the hospital. Patients also regained their ability to do usual tasks more quickly. Hospital at home models have now been widely adopted around the world, including by the NHS, with investment accelerated during the pandemic. What's happening in Scotland? Since 2020, the Scottish Government has allocated £8 million to support the development of hospital at home. There are now 312 so-called virtual beds, run by 21 health and social care partnerships, including in the Highlands and Western Isles. A total of 7,369 patients were managed via hospital at home beds between April and November 2022. The Scottish Government recently announced £3.6 million will fund the creation of an extra 156 virtual beds. What's the problem? The Royal College of Physicians, Edinburgh, has welcomed the expansion of hospital at home, but also warned that there is a risk that staff shortages in the NHS could lead to more pressure falling on unpaid carers. RCPE President Professor Andrew Elder cautioned that hospital at home should not be resourced at the expense of existing services, and that any additional impact on carers of managing the older person at home must be adequately evaluated. However, researchers in child health from Aberdeen University have also flagged a lack of paediatric hospital at home provision as a problem for Scotland, amid an unsustainable increase in hospital admissions for under 16s, particularly short stays and infant admissions. What happens in England for children? Several NHS trusts in England have established children's hospital at home services, including in parts of London, Liverpool, and Southampton. The services are designed to get children home from hospital earlier and to prevent admissions among children with complex or long-term conditions, including children with a terminal illness. This includes home nursing care, such as babies requiring oxygen therapy or provision of intravenous antibiotics, as well as access to specialists in childhood diseases, asthma or epilepsy remotely or via community hubs. Service users have said the model enables them to continue a normal life with minimal disruption. That article was written by Helen McArdle. This is from the Herald on Thursday, the 1st of June 2023, from the news section. Scottish economy, faster GDP growth than UK. Good news. This article is written by Ian McConnell. Amid the general UK economic malaise, it is great to get some good news. And official figures today revealing that economic growth in Scotland was four times the lowly rate previously revealed for the UK as a whole in the first quarter certainly provided some much needed cheer. The Scottish Government figures showed gross domestic product north of the border in the opening 3 months of 2023 was up by 0.4% on the fourth quarter of last year. UK GDP grew by only 0.1% quarter on quarter in the opening 3 months of this year, according to previously published figures from the Office for National Statistics. There seem to be plenty of doomsayers at the moment in relation to the Scottish economy, so today's numbers are a heartening antidote to some of the negativity, and almost certainly represented an upside surprise for many, given the weakness of the first quarter UK growth. Scottish growth in the first quarter of 2023 represents an acceleration from expansion of 0.2% quarter on quarter in the final 3 months of last year. GDP had dipped by 0.3% in the third quarter of last year and been flat over the 3 months to June 2022. It had increased by 0.6% quarter on quarter in the first 3 months of last year. Comparing the first quarter of 2023 with the opening 3 months of last year, Scottish GDP was up by 0.3%. This is ahead of year-on-year growth of 0.2% in the first quarter in the UK as a whole. Of course, no one is pretending that everything in the garden is rosy. Companies in Scotland and elsewhere in the UK continue to face a very difficult operating backdrop, with inflation having fallen but still sky high by the standards of recent decades, a skills and labour shortage crisis fuelled by Brexit, and the loss of frictionless trade with our biggest export market, the European Union. And then there is the continuing energy price misery for businesses and households. Understandably, sounding a note of caution about the economic outlook, the Scottish Government said in the GP data release, "The start of 2023 has seen a slight improvement in economic activity and optimism compared to the second half of 2022, during which economic output remained broadly flat and inflation rose to its highest rate since 1981. However, economic conditions are extremely challenging and the outlook for the year ahead remains subdued. Things are clearly tough for businesses and households alike. However, the fact that the backdrop is so difficult makes the latest growth figures for the economy north of the border particularly welcome, especially given the general lack of things economic to celebrate in the UK these days." That article was written by Ian McConnell. This is from the Herald on Thursday, the 1st of June 2023, from the news section. SNP meet auditing deadline for £1.2 million grant in the nick of time. This article is written by Tom Gordon. The SNP has met the auditing deadline for keeping a £1.2 million grant with just hours to spare. The party's Westminster group confirmed it had submitted an auditor's certificate to the House of Commons authorities in respect of its annual short money allowance. The group had until midnight to supply the paperwork or it would lose access to the public funding, which is given to opposition parties with at least two MPs. Its ability to meet the May 31st deadline had been in doubt after it emerged the SNP's long-term auditors quit last September amid a police probe into the party's accounts. Johnson Carmichael resigned, cited a review of its clients. The exit left the SNP struggling to find a replacement, and it was not until May the 3rd that leader Humza Yousaf announced Manchester-based AMS Accountants Group had been hired. The firm's arrival allowed the SNP to hit a May the 11th deadline to sign off the spending of a £145,000 policy development grant from the Electoral Commission in 2022 to 2023, which could otherwise have been clawed back. The next deadline the party faced was today's for the Westminster Group, which needed a certificate to show it spent £1.1 million short money grant appropriately in 2022 to 23. Failure to meet the deadline would have seen the Commons cut off all other short money funding due to the £1.2 million in 2023-24 until a certificate was produced. Both the Westminster Group, which has an income of about £1.5 million, and the Central SNP, which has an income of around £4.5 million, both still face a July the 7th deadline to file their 2022 annual accounts with the Electoral Commission. Westminster SNP Group Treasurer Peter Grant said, "I'm pleased to confirm that the annual return for the SNP Westminster Group short money for 2022 to 23 has received a clean audit certificate and has been submitted on time to the parliamentary authorities. Throughout this process, SNP MPs have remained focused on standing up for Scotland and supporting our hard-working staff. We will continue to hold the Tories and pro-Brexit Labour to account for the damage their policies are inflicting on Scotland. Police Scotland have been investigating the SNP's accounts for almost 2 years after receiving complaints that around £660,000 raised for IndyRef 2 was spent on other things. Former Chief Executive Peter Murrell, who is married to Nicola Sturgeon, and Treasurer Colin Beattie have both been arrested, questioned and released without charge pending further investigation since April. Police also seized a £110,000 luxury camper van from outside the home of Mr. Morell's 92-year-old mother. Mr. Beattie, the MSP for Midlothian, North and Musselburgh, resigned as SNP National Treasurer the day after his arrest and has been replaced by MP Stuart MacDonald. That article was written by Tom Gordon.
Herald Scotland recorded on Friday, 2nd of June 2023. Arts and Entertainments. Author J.D. Kirk and his love for the Lenehan Forest. By Susan Swarbrick, columnist and senior features writer. J.D. Kirk, author. Where is it? Lenehan Forest in the northern slopes of Ben Nevis, just up the road from Fort William. Why do you go there? Ostensibly it's to walk the dog, but it's also where, with nobody else to get in the way, I generally come up with book ideas and solve story problems in whatever I'm currently working on. I also briefly tried running there, but since I despise running in all its forms, I stopped almost immediately. How often do you go? Not nearly as often as I used to. It was once a daily event, but our dog broke her leg a few years back and can now only manage short walks in the flat, not big all-day treks through the woods. Sometimes, though, when I'm fully stuck in something, I'll take myself up there for a few hours and just wander the tracks. How did you discover it? I've always been dimly aware of all those trees while driving up towards Inverness, but it was maybe 8 years ago when I decided on a whim to take the then one-year-old dog up to check it out. We both immediately fell in love with it. What's your favourite memory? My wife, two kids and myself, on one of those all-too-rare, gloriously hot summer's days in the Highlands, getting absolutely plastered in stinking mud after the dog decided to swim in a small pond of the stuff, then rushing back to excitedly share her discovery. Or the time the dog walked out onto a frozen pond, then panicked and wouldn't come back, leaving me to waddle nervously across the ice while my son stood back and laughed. Or the look of wonder in my then 5-year-old daughter's face when we randomly found a rock that someone had quite expertly painted and left out for a passerby to discover. Or, in fact, there are too many fond memories to list. Who do you take? In the past, the whole family, nowadays just myself, which sounds quite sad when I write it down, but is actually bloody lovely. What do you take? A small notebook, several pens, brackets, because you can't be too careful, close brackets, and my naughtiest, most stubborn writing problems. What do you leave behind? Footprints and gratitude. Sum it up in 5 words. Quiet, remote, wild, inspiring, green. What other travel spot is on your wish list? We did a helicopter tour of the Grand Canyon a few years ago. While standing marvelling at it, my wife and I spotted a boat in the Colorado River and both wished we'd done that instead. So that. J.D. Kirk is the author of the best-selling DCI Logan crime novels. He has written a new series of thrillers set in Kilmarnock, centering on D.I. Heather Filson. The first instalment, The One That Got Away, Xertex Crime, £9.99, is out now. By Susan Swarbrick. Herald Scotland recorded on Friday, 2nd of June 2023. Arts and Entertainments. Books. New releases range from thrillers to inspiring non-fiction. By Herald Magazine. Fiction. The Happy Couple. Nisha Dolan. WNN. £16.99. Ebook. £7.99. Luke and Celine are happy. They've been together for a while. The logical next step surely is getting married. It doesn't matter if they actually want to be with other people or prefer playing the piano to being with one another, does it? In Nisha Dolan's new novel, Following the Excellent Exciting Times, she explores LGBTQ+ identity.
how our families form us in subversive female characters in the best possible way. The Happy Couple explores bisexuality, heartbreak and complex characters without ambiguity or cliché, and consistently shows every character is flawed, with a really brilliant plot designed around a day none of us want to come. With some chapters written like a diary and others coming from characters we may presume will be insignificant, this book excellently explores multiple perspectives in one relationship and has a brilliantly engaging voyeuristic feel. Each perspective could be a novel in itself, and Dolan once again crafts a brilliant story that leaves you desperately wanting more. 9 out of 10. Yellowface, Rebecca F. Quang. The Borough Press, £16.99. Ebook £9.99. Yellowface is bold, confronting, and quite unlike anything else you'll read this year. Told from the perspective of white writer Junie, who's an entirely unreliable narrator, it weaves a gripping tale of racial politics and who gets to tell what stories. Junie is jealous of the success of her author friend Athena, who is Asian, and when Athena dies in a freak accident, Junie makes the decision to steal the rough manuscript for her latest masterpiece and publish it as her own, to great success. It's a book about Chinese workers in World War I and the mental gymnastics Junie does to justify why she's telling this story while toning down the racism and making white characters more sympathetic is astounding. Success comes at a price, and soon Junie is trapped in a cycle of accusations and social media abuse. She's unbelievably delusional, really thinking she's a victim in all situations, not the person who stole a POC's work and passed it off as her own. It's quite heavy-handed in parts, but that feels to be the point. Pacey, it reads almost like a thriller. You won't want to put it down, despite the main voice being quite so desperately dislikable. 8 out of 10. Big Swiss, Jen Bagan. Faber and Faber, £16.99. Ebook, £9.99. Big Swiss is Jen Bagan's third novel and is a tale of sly voyeurism and sexual drama. We're introduced to Greta, a 45-year-old farm tech who gives up her job and 10-year relationship to share a rundown house with an anorexic weed-selling cocaine addict. She meets Big Swiss via her transcription work for a sex and relationship coach and becomes infatuated. The two start an affair. Flavia, or Big Swiss as Greta calls her, is larger than life and as damaged as Greta due to past trauma. The relationship is doomed to fail. However, we're kept wondering if they can overcome their past traumas and move on. It's darkly funny, full of clever analogies and quite emotive. 7 out of 10. Non-fiction, The Success Myth, Emma Gannon, Torva, price £16.99, ebook £10.99. This is a thoroughly thought-provoking and engaging read. Emma Gannon's The Success Myth explores the commonly held myths about what it traditionally means to be successful, from money to happiness and ticking society's ready-made boxes. Through looking at her own journey and interviewing other successful people, Gannon delves into the reasons why our overly celebrated and traditional version of success might be making us feel lonely, unfulfilled and dispirited. But she believes there is a way to do things differently. The Success Myth aims to help you discover what truly sparks your interests and how to uncover your individual path to a fulfilling life, whatever that may look like. You will not be able to put this book down. 8 out of 10. Children's Book of the Week. I Am Oliver the Otter. Pam Ayers. Illustrated by Nicola O'Byrne. Macmillan Children's Books. Price £12.99. Ebook £8.99. This is a beautiful rhyming picture book by the well-known British poet and broadcaster, telling the story of Oliver the Otter and his life in the riverbank. The story is interwoven with facts about these lovely animals. Did you know, for example, that sea otters like to sleep holding paws in pairs, and that they can be found all over the world except Australia and Antarctica? During his journey of discovery, Oliver meets Ottilie, the silkiest and nicest otter he has ever seen, and before long the couple have pups, brackets, also known as kits, close brackets. Cozying up together, the family settles down in their underground home until the babies are old enough to swim. As well as featuring stunning pictures by illustrator Nicola O'Byrne, the book issues an important plea to children to help look after waterways and free them from pollution. It is sure to delight children aged 2 to 10. 8 out of 10 by Herald Magazine.
From the Herald Scotland, Friday the 2nd of June 2023, in the politics section, Greed and Lorna Slater branded shameless as private boat cost revealed. Report by political editor Tom Gordon. Green Minister Lorna Slater has been accused of having no shame after taxpayers were billed £1,200 to charter her a private boat to Rum instead of her trying to use a Calmac ferry. The Scottish Tories, who obtained the figure using Freedom of Information, said it was a kick in the teeth to islanders who were forced to rely on the crisis hit ferry network. It would have cost around £75 for Ms Slater and her entourage to go by Calmac. The Scottish Green co-leader, whose party urges greater use of public transport, was criticised last month after it emerged she and her officials hired a catamaran from Malaig. The Scottish Government said at the time that using the 42-passenger MV Larvin from Western Isles Cruises would maximise the Circular Economy's Minister's time on Rum. Ms Slater and seven others were seen boarding the boat ahead of her five-hour visit on May the 12th, where a £9.40 return fares in Calmac for all of them would have been £75.20. Calmac's timetable also showed she could have spent 5 hours 10 minutes on Rum using its regular service that day. Ms Slater refused to answer press questions about using a private charter as she boarded. Tory Transport spokesman Graham Simpson said, "This revelation is a further kick in the teeth to Scotland's betrayed island communities, as well as taxpayers footing the enormous bill for the SNP Greens ferry scandal. Lorna Slater clearly has no shame. The government she's a member of has created mayhem in Scotland's ferry network through their incompetence, and yet she thought it appropriate to shun a Calmac ferry for at less than a tenner a head return, to shell out £1,200 of public money on a charter boat to take her and her team to Rum. It's utterly tone deaf to the plight of islanders, who have to make do with a pitiful ferry service. It's also the height of hypocrisy from a Green Minister who's forever demanding a greater use of public transport." A Scottish Government spokeswoman said Mrs Slater's visit was warmly welcomed by the community and was an opportunity to discuss its vision for the future of the island in Kinloch Castle. The former Edwardian Pleasure Palace is at the risk of deteriorating as it is no longer being used as a hostel. The Minister's visit on 12th of May was well received by residents and community groups, the spokeswoman said. The crossing to Rum was arranged by government agency Nature Scot with the agreement of the Scottish Government to maximise time on the island speaking to residents and fit with Ms Slater's ministerial schedule. Speaking after her visit, Steve Robertson of the Isle of Rum Community Trust told the BBC the row of the boat was a storm in a teacup. He said, "Lorna Slater is coming over to do a very important meeting to try and move things forward for the community. It makes people feel disappointed, that's the story for us. For us, a taxi charter boat is a normal part of island life. We have to use these to make the island anything like sustainable. She can take the ferry service if she wants to, having the meeting on the ferry, and fit it in within very narrow options to spend time in Rum." And that report was by Tom Gordon. From the Herald Scotland, Friday the 2nd of June 2023, from the news section, exclusive, ministers prepare to sink millions more into Ferguson Marine. By Martin Williams. Ministers are prepared to sink millions more into Scotland's crisis-hit nationalised shipyard firm to ensure it has a commercial future before it is privatised. It has emerged that a multi-million pound tranche of capital expenditure had been requested by Ferguson Marine as part of a plan to make it more competitive. It's being evaluated by the Scottish Government. The move comes on top of the decision to inject a further £61 million into the Ferguson Marine, Port Glasgow shipyard this financial year amidst a ferry building fiasco. It comes as Ferguson Marine Chief Executive David Tideman has indicated that it is hoping for a significant order for the building of ships for the UK and Scottish wind farm market. They say they are in discussions and are working on preliminary designs for the ships and that it could create 10 to 15 years of work. He said it comes from a commitment from two other major operators in the wind farm market to build ships in Scotland, but he indicated that it was a longer term project with ships may not be built until 2027, which doesn't fill the immediate gap. But he has said it is a very significant opportunity for the future. The Ferguson Marine Board admitted there was a significant doubt over its ability to continue as a going concern due to doubts over future funding in its last 2021-22 financial statement. And Auditor General Stephen Boyle said at the end of April that there remains doubts over the long-term future of the shipyard firm because of the lack of a business plan. Ministers were accused of presiding over an outrageous mismanagement of public funds after pressing ahead with the second ferry at the Ferguson shipyard, known only as Hull 802, despite learning it would be cheaper to scrap the vessel and tender for a new one. In March, it was confirmed that due to persistent design gaps and build errors, the first of the two Ferguson Marine vessels, Glen Sannox, is scheduled for autumn 2023 rather than the end of May 2023, with a contract backstop of no later than the end of December 2023. Hull 802 is now expected to set sail until the autumn of 2024, having already been delayed to the end of March 2024. The contract backstop was stated to be at the end of December 2024. They were originally due to set sail in mid-2018, with one initially to serve Arran and the other to serve the Sky Triangle routes to North Uist and Harris, but they were well over 5 years late. It is suggested the cost of delivery may quadruple compared to the original £97 million contract costs. The two ferries for Calmac were ordered in 2015, when Ferguson Marine was owned by Jim McCall, a then pro-independence businessman who rescued the Inverclyde Yard from administration a year earlier. When the build ran into trouble, the shipyard firm fell into administration and was nationalised, with Mr McCall and the government-owned ferry owning and procurement agency CMAL blaming each other for the fiasco. The Scottish Government's accountable officer for the yard, the General Economy Director Gregor Irwin, said a secret report commissioned by the Scottish Government from consultancy firm First Marine International, FMI, is punctuating ministers' decision-making and how it deals with Ferguson Marine. He indicated that privatisation would come after the shipyard firm was on a sure footing. He has confirmed that investment from the Scottish Government was needed for longer term yard plans, which are subject to a new wave of due diligence. External advisors have been brought in to help with the process, and that it is clear to raise the productivity of the yard and ensure that we can take advantage of all those commercial opportunities that future investments will be required. The key objective for the yard has always been to secure shipbuilding on the Clyde, to ensure that we maintain shipbuilding skills and that there's a strong sustainable commercial future for the yard, with investment, winning new orders, taking advantage of the commercial opportunities identified. That's all part of that. Then the questions around the future ownership structures, they follow from that. The key is to secure commercial success for the yard. The Ferguson Marine Board have said that it has felt that for the shipyard to improve its efficiency and to be competitive in the broader market, it must secure a pipeline of repeatable work over several years. And it highlighted two opportunities, the Loch Class project and the development of work in support of the warship programme with BAE Systems. It was recognised by the board as strategically important for Ferguson Marine prior to any other consideration of more complex, larger vessels in the future. The vital contract work from BAE Systems, which is delivering City Class Type 26 frigates on the Clyde and is trumpeted as signalling a new dawn at the yard, was valued at just £2 million. Mr. Irwin has told MSPs of the secret FMI report. It is a very important piece of work. It's absolutely right that we commissioned first-class, external, independent technical advice that allows us to understand in detail what it would take to bring the productivity of the yard up to the average standard for Northern European shipyards. So Ferguson Marine is well placed to win new orders and get on that path to a sustainable commercial future. That sort of advice may not come cheaply, but it is very important and it's absolutely integral to the work that's underway in the yard at the moment to develop a long-term business plan, and it's still ongoing. This is one of the things that is necessary in order to make sure that the right decisions are taken to put the yard onto that pathway towards a sustainable future. The financial collapse of Mr. McCall's Ferguson Marine, which runs the last remaining shipyard in the Lower Clyde, in August 2019, came amid soaring costs and delays to the construction of the two ferries. It came 5 years after tycoon Jim McCall first rescued the yard when it went bust. Audit Scotland has continued to raise questions about the yard's future, despite attempts by new management to map out a long-term plan beyond the delivery of the two ferries. Nationalised Ferguson Marine has previously responded to concerns over its status as a going concern by insisting there is a strong future for the business, despite its last annual financial review for 2021-22, admitting there was significant doubt over its ability to continue as a going concern. The board of directors went on to say that they are working with the Scottish Government to continue to develop our strategy and processes to deliver a sustainable business model which will secure the long-term position of the company. The Scottish Government, in response to concerns, said its priorities were to complete the ferries and secure the yard's future, while the Deputy First Minister said that ministers remained committed to do all that we can to help achieve a prosperous future for the yard. Ferguson Marine say the BAE contract involving fabrication work for just one of the Type 26 vessels being built on the Clyde is around 5% of the value of what the yard might secure if it completes what was a pilot project well. And that article was an exclusive by Martin Williams. From the Glasgow Times, Saturday the 3rd of June 2023, from the sports section, Celtic 3, Inverness 1, 5 talking points as Celtic seal a treble. Report by Graham McGarry. Celtic eventually claimed a 3-1 win over Inverness Caledonian Thistle to claim the Scottish Cup and cap off a sensational season overall, as Ange Postecoglou joined the club's managerial greats by tucking a treble into their trophy cabinet. A goal from Kyogo Furuhashi, who else, eventually broke down the stuffy resistance put up by Cali Thistle in the first half, before substitute Lee Labada seemed to have killed the contest with a second 25 minutes from time. Inverness's own super sub Daniel Mackay, though, popped up to bury a diving header past Joe Hart on 84 minutes to set up a grandstand finale, but Jota killed their hopes with a clincher as the clock ticked into stoppage time. Here are the talking points from a glorious day for Celtic fans at Hampden in the sun. Ange Postecoglou has secured his Celtic legacy. It may not be a day for poring over the speculation of last week in great detail, and it is only right that the focus instead is on Celtic's achievement of racking up yet another treble. So routine have this club made the feat over recent years that it has almost been forgotten how difficult it is to accomplish, with Postecoglou now becoming just the fifth manager in the club's entire history to do it. The others are Jock Steen, Martin O'Neill, Brendan Rodgers and Neil Lennon. That Postecoglou now deserves to be held in the same regards as the last three names in that list at least seems beyond doubt, and whatever happens in the next few days and weeks, there can be no debating just how impressive his reign has been to this point, particularly when you consider where Celtic were when he arrived, unheralded from Japan. For now, Postecoglou, his players and his adoring public will simply bask in the glow of this memorable season before contemplating what may come next. With Kyogo, one touch is all it takes. The masses of Celtic fans around Hampden were starting to get just a little impatient with their side's inability to break Inverness down as we neared half-time, with Billy Dodd's men holding firm and limiting the heavy favourites to a handful of underwhelming efforts from range that were dragged wide. Of course, Celtic had all the ball, but they were doing very little with it. Their passing was safe and pedestrian, and the well-drilled Highlanders were looking comfortable in their shape. In fact, it appeared the Celtic players were doing their utmost in those early stages to put off any watching suitors peering at manager Postecoglou from North London. There could be no place for a false sense of security when Kyogo is around, though. If his thunderous strike that eventually opened the scoring with just 7 minutes before the interval wasn't quite the striker's first touch, it must have been close to it. But what a touch it was. Matt O'Reilly got on to Alistair Johnson's pass down the right-hand side of the Cali defence, and his clever cutback was weighted perfectly for the razor-sharp Kyogo to steam onto it. In a flash, the ball was past Mark Ridgers in the back of the net. He hadn't trained all week following the injury he picked up against Aberdeen on the final day of the Premiership season, and was removed before the hour for Hyung-Gyu Oh, but Kyogo had made his mark nonetheless, as he has done throughout another outstanding season for the country's top scorer. May O'Reilly assist you. It wasn't long ago there was something of a narrative going around that O'Reilly was having a rather underwhelming season, particularly off the back of his stunning introduction to Scottish football following his move from MK Dons the preceding January. Most of that seems to have stemmed from the fact that he had failed to get in the score sheet until Celtic put 5 past St Mirren in a 5th round of this competition in mid-February, a quirk that could be partly explained by the impressive period he spent lying deep as an understudy for injured captain Captain McGregor. What has rather been overlooked, though, is that he has consistently been a threat for Celtic in attack throughout the campaign, ending the Premiership season as a top assist provider with 12 to his name, and grabbing another vital one here as he grasped the thistle, if you will, just when the obdurate Inverness were eyeing up the safety of the dressing room. Callum McGregor racks up his 20th honour. The Celtic captain is no stranger to clambering up those Hampden steps, as he did so here to loft the Scottish Cup above his head. He further cemented his place among the club's greats and the most decorated players. On a day when Celtic had so much possession, he was always going to play a central part in proceedings, but he also burst forward to claim an assist for Celtic's second goal, thrusting down the left to square for Abada to tap home. Though he and Celtic were forced to wait for it, as a VAR check showed he was onside by a whisker as he latched onto Jota's pass in behind. From that point, there seemed little doubt over McGregor winning his 20th honour as a Celtic player, and his 5th on a possible 6 as captain, but although Kelly made him sweat a little, they got there in the end. Inverness can hold their heads high. The last thing that Cali Thistle manager Dodd want to be labelled as plucky losers, but there is no doubt whatsoever that he and his men can be proud of their efforts against what looks to be insurmountable odds. Most of their good work was done in their own half, of course, manfully defending their box against a superior opponent. Indeed, their only regret may be that they rarely showed much composure when they did land on the ball. When they did put a move together, they found the net, as well as Duffy's delightful delivery was powered home by Mackay's diving header, but it proved too little, too late. The challenge now will be to pick up the pieces and produce more consistently in next season's championship, so they're rubbing shoulders with the likes of Celtic on a more regular basis. And that report was by Graeme McGarry. From the Herald Scotland, Friday the 2nd of June 2023, from the sports section, Champions League referee could be removed over alleged far-right links, by Martin McMillan. UEFA will decide on Friday whether to replace Champions League final referee Szymon Marcinaik due to his alleged links with a far-right movement in Poland. Marcinaik has been investigated by UEFA after it was claimed he spoke at a recent event organised by Polish far-right leader Sławomir Mentzen. UEFA appointed Marcinaik last month to referee the Champions League final between Manchester City and Inter Milan in Istanbul on June the 10th. European football's governing body said, UEFA is aware of the allegations surrounding Szymon Marcinaik and is seeking urgent clarification. UEFA and the whole football community abhorred the values that are promoted by the group in question and takes these allegations very seriously. A further announcement will be made on Friday after reviewing all the evidence. Mentzen, co-chairman of the Confederation Party, launched the political slogan, "We stand against Jews, gays, abortion, taxation and the European Union." Anti-racism group Never Again has urged UEFA to drop Marcinaik after claiming he had promoted and was one of the keynote speakers at an event held by Mentzen at the International Congress Centre in Katowice. Marcinaik, 42, became the first Polish referee to take charge of a World Cup final in Qatar last December when Argentina beat France in penalties. He refereed the second leg of City's semi-final win against Real Madrid and has taken charge of 7 other Champions League fixtures. And that report is by Martin McMillan. From the Herald Scotland, Saturday the 3rd of June 2023, from the sports section, Manchester City one win away from sporting immortality, by Andy Hampson. Manchester United are one win away from sporting immortality after underlining their greatness by completing a Premier League and FA Cup double. Not even arch rivals Manchester United, in the white-hot atmosphere of a Wembley derby, could throw a Stats banner into the works, as their seemingly relentless charge towards the treble continued on Saturday. As the only previous side to win the Premier League, FA Cup and Champions League in the same season, back in 1999, United and their fans would have loved nothing more than to halt Pep Guardiola's juggernaut. Yet, although they were not eviscerated in the manner Arsenal and Real Madrid were in two other high-profile City fixtures recently, they were ultimately no match for a side who had become far more than just their noisy neighbours. City will now head to Istanbul for next week's Champions League final against Inter Milan, riding high in confidence in the prize that they have coveted most for so long should finally be within their grasp. One of the great features of this City side is how, despite the brilliance of headline names such as Erling Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne, other players are often ready to seize the moment when it matters. In the semi-final against Sheffield United, it was Riyad Mahrez with a brilliant hat-trick, and on this occasion, and not for the first time, it was Ilkay Gundogan. The German midfielder, who scored twice against Aston Villa, City clinched the Premier League title in the final day of last season, was magnificent all afternoon, scoring both goals in a deserved 2-1 win. City arrived at Wembley in casual wear, but there was nothing casual about their start. Gundogan volleyed them ahead with a blistering strike after just 12 seconds, the fastest goal in FA Cup final history, and yet another notable achievement in this remarkable season. Further chances came in for the opening 5 minutes, and it seemed United could have quickly been overrun. Their fearsome attack, so fluid during a brilliant spring run that saw them reel in Arsenal and claim the title, seemed in fine fettle, banishing doubts rustiness might have set in after a couple of dead rubber fixtures. Yet, while all that was encouraging, so too was their resilience after United fought back their way back into the game. Jack Grealish considered himself unfortunate to have been penalised for handball in the box, but such rulings often go against defenders when VAR gets involved. City soon regained their composure after Bruno Fernandes levelled from the spot and retook the lead early in the second half, again through Gundogan. The club captain is out of contract in the summer and will be sorely missed should he decide to move on. That, however, is a matter that can be dealt with later. For now, the chief concern is for a side already one of the best England has ever produced to go on and cement their status by winning the Champions League. And that was a report by Andy Hampson. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 5th of June 2023, news. Glasgow, small explosion at university building sparks road closure. Report by Taylor Murray. A spillage of potentially hazardous materials has seen emergency services shut a Glasgow road. Fire crews were called just before 4 p.m. on Monday to the city's Cathedral Street after the spillage. Police Scotland said they were assisting the fire service following reports of a small explosion. Emergency services have since shut North Hanover Street to George Street, North Frederick Street to George Street, George Street to Montrose Street and High Street to Cathedral Street. Fire crews remain at the scene outside the University of Strathclyde's Thomas Graham building. A Scottish Fire and Rescue spokesman said, "We were alerted at 3:54 p.m. on Monday, June the 5th, to an incident at a property in Cathedral Street, Glasgow. Operations Control mobilised 8 appliances to the scene, where they were met with a spillage of potentially hazardous materials. Crews remain in attendance. There are no reported casualties." Inspector Gary Montgomery said, "We would ask drivers to use an alternative route, and people should avoid the area to allow emergency services access. There is no immediate threat to the public." And that report was by Taylor Murray. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 5th of June 2023. From the news section, Glasgow, man killed after being hit by bus on Argyll Street. By Gabriel Mackay. A man has been killed in Glasgow after being hit by a bus. The 39-year-old was struck by the public transport vehicle in Argyll Street, near to Grey Street, in the early hours of Monday morning. Police were called to the scene at around 12:05 a.m, with the man pronounced dead at the scene. The driver of the bus and all passengers were uninjured. Sergeant Nicholas Twigg from the Divisional Road Policing Unit at Govan said, "Our thoughts are with the family and friends of the man who has died. We are carrying out inquiries to establish the circumstances and the cause of the crash. I would urge any witnesses or anyone with information or personal footage that may assist our investigation to contact 101, quoting the reference number 0008 of 5th of June. And that report was by Gabriel Mackay.
From the Herald, Monday the 5th of June 2023, sports section. Celtic grant Ange Postecoglou permission to complete Tottenham move. By Aidan Smith, Sports Audience and Engagement Editor. SADC have granted permission to Ange Postecoglou to hold talks with Tottenham over a move to the Premier League side. The Aussie is set to complete his move down south in the coming days after securing the treble with Celtic on Sunday. It has now been widely reported that the Hoops have allowed Postecoglou to hold talks with a London-based club to agree terms. Postecoglou admitted on Saturday that his ability to enjoy Celtic's treble success would soon be disrupted by some decision-making, and that seems to have happened even quicker than he anticipated. The 57-year-old dodged questions on his future before and after Saturday's Scottish Cup final win over Inverness, having emerged as the overwhelming front-runner to take over at Spurs. Neither club are commenting publicly, but reports claim Postecoglou told Celtic principal shareholder Dermot Desmond on Saturday night that he intended to leave for London, and he is now said to be closing in on signing a 2-year Spurs deal with an option to extend. When repeatedly pressed on his future after Celtic's 3-1 Hampden win over Inverness on Saturday, the Greek-born Australian said, "I anticipate enjoying this moment for the next 24 to 48 hours, as long as I can, before someone drags me away and takes my attention away from enjoying something that's been hard earned. The reality is there's probably players in that dressing room who won't be here next year. That's the nature of football. But I want them to enjoy it. I am going to enjoy it. And that's all I'm going to focus on until someone grabs me by the collar and tells me I have to answer certain questions." The former Australia head coach has won 5 domestic trophies out of a possible 6 after arriving from Yokohama F. Marinos in Japan, and was linked with numerous Premier League clubs throughout this season. Postecoglou became a hero with the Celtic support, not just for resuming their success after a barren season, but also for implementing an attacking style of play and his connection with the fans. But he looks set to swap Glasgow for another rebuild job as Spurs finally look to appoint a permanent successor to Antonio Conte, who departed on March the 26th. Postecoglou is due to go on a family holiday on Tuesday, and the deal could be finished very, very quickly. That article was by Aidan Smith. From the Herald, Monday, the 5th of June, 2023. Sports section. Mackay calls Nick Walsh finest referee in the country after VAR call. By Graham McGarry, senior sports writer. Malky Mackay praised the bravery of Nick Walsh for refusing to give a first-half penalty to Partick Thistle in their dramatic playoff victory, calling him the best referee in the country. Walsh was called over to the VAR screen by Greg Aitken after turning down a Thistle appeal as Ross Docherty went down in the area under a challenge from Nohan Kenna. But Walsh didn't budge and stuck to his original decision. Mackay had sympathy for Thistle striker Brian Graham as another VAR check later went against him for a handball. But the county manager ultimately thinks the official got the big calls correct in such a vital fixture for both clubs. "I feel as if I need to lie down in a dark room for 5 minutes to catch my breath from what just happened," Mackay told Sky Sports. "Are these penalties really penalties? I look at the FA Cup final yesterday. Is that a penalty? It is under the rules, as is that one today. But it's really harsh, as they all are this year. They've given us Nick Walsh on the final day, the finest referee in the country as far as I'm concerned, and he had the bravery to actually go to the monitor and say to Greg Aitken it wasn't the penalty in the first half. So fair play for that. I said that if we get one, Thistle would wobble. And when we score again, right away after that, it gave us something to chase. It showed our character." His Thistle counterpart Chris Doolin was understandably crestfallen after watching his team let a premiership place slip from their grasp. But he's hoping the Jags' support will stick by them for another promotion push next season after a memorable playoff run. "I'm devastated, as you would imagine," Doolin said. "I think everybody is. But when it goes to penalty kicks, it's a lottery. Football is cruel, but penalty kicks is an even crueler way for it at the end, I would say. We got so many good things to take out of the games. And the way we've played, we've got so much support behind us. And I think the supporters have been an absolute credit to the club. Hopefully that continues, because I hope we've given them something to be proud of. I said to the players, nobody goes out to miss a penalty kick or miss a chance. It just is what happens in football. It's a cruel way to go out, and I'm really gutted for everybody." That article was by Graham McGarry.
This article is from the Herald on Monday, the 5th of June 2023, from the opinion section, and the headline is Time We Break the Taboos When It Comes to Talking About Grief. And the article was written by Daniela Teiss. If there is an afterlife, I imagine my gran sitting on a sun lounger in a bikini and her yellow vest top, toes painted a bright pink, with a beer and cigarette in hand, laughing at something with her deep infectious laugh. For that is how I remember her at this time of year. She always loved the sun. Her name was Carola. Google tells me it means free woman, or the brave, or the helpful. While she always hated her name, I cannot think of anything more fitting. She was opinionated, sometimes stubbornly so, and not afraid to speak up. She was outgoing, always happy to stop and chat to friends and strangers alike. She was also caring and kind, and I think that radiated from her. People always drew towards her. Apparently, Elvis Presley asked her out. She said no, when he was stationed in the town beside the one I grew up in. I can't say if this is true. It was well before my time, but I like to think it was. I'd certainly understand why. I like to think that she was not like other grands, that she was special. Maybe she was, maybe she wasn't, but what she had certainly was. When I think about it, she was more like a second mother than a grandparent. That's maybe why the absence of her hit me so hard. We always lived together in the same house, and she watched me as my parents worked. I shared almost every aspect of my little world with her until the day I didn't. She taught me how to walk in heels. Don't bend your knees, Daniela. The two key basics of skincare, moisturise and tone twice a day, every day. I still do. That it's okay to have pancakes for lunch sometimes if life just calls for it. And so much more. I remember her singing, not very well, to the radio, us top and tailing on the two-seater couch, both reading a book. The above are the moments I remember the most, not the 2 years after her leukemia diagnosis, during which I saw her slowly change, not her death, which, coming up this month, will be 12 years ago. Through my memories, she doesn't always feel dead. Immanuel Kant allegedly said, "The one who lives in the memories of his loved ones can't be dead. Dead is only who's forgotten." And I believe that to be very true. Visiting Germany recently, I found myself within the walls I grew up in. They have changed a lot. They are redecorated and house a new generation in the form of my stepbrother, stepmother and my dad. When I recently talked about home, I said home is not just bricks and mortar. However, that there are ghosts of memories past trapped within these physical structures that house us is undeniable. There my gran was when I was eating breakfast the other week, one of the few surviving bowls from her wedding gift set holding my fruit and yoghurt. I smashed almost every other one on her stone floor over the years, so much so that she refused to let me eat out of them while she was alive. I didn't pick the bowl with all that in mind. I don't really know why I did. But at that moment, she was there. It felt like she was sitting with me. Listening in closely, I felt I could hear her laugh. But of course, grief isn't inherently rosy either. The loss of someone and what comes after is bittersweet, and it hurts. I sometimes catch myself having a bad day. Sometimes it is certain triggers. I can't listen to Jimmy Eat World's Hear You Me, the song I had on loop when she passed, without bursting into tears. Once the crying is over, I sometimes joke about the somewhat cruel variation to Pavlov's dog experiment I seem to have performed on myself. Sometimes it is just out of the blue, when all of a sudden I feel an ache that the person I am thinking about is not there for me to hug or physically be close to. What strikes me in these moments is how little, despite 12 years having passed, I have words to describe the way I am feeling. This column is probably the most detailed account I have ever given. What strikes me too is the sense of unease I have in just laying it all bare to others in its raw format, without providing space for escapism from the bleakness of it. When I told people I was writing this piece, I felt the instant need to follow up with something very cheery to write about for such a sunny Saturday, haha. The thing is, I am not alone when it comes to bereavement or grief. Unfortunately, the experience is universal. So, why is it so hard to describe or talk about? I have noticed it myself when it comes to talking to others about their loss. When one of my best friends lost her little brother to cancer when we were teenagers, I could hardly bear to say his name to her. Speaking out loud about him made me feel as if I were to break something fragile with every syllable. It is a universal experience, grief. It can affect everyone, no matter big or small, young or old. Often it is associated with death, but of course can be just as much be linked to absence of other kinds. Yet, despite its non-exclusive nature, it can feel very individualistic when it comes to dealing with the array of emotions that come with it. We avoid talking about bereavement, particularly death, and in ways that is understandable. Talking about it ourselves can bring with it hurt. Talking to others about their experience may feel like opening wounds rather than helping to heal them. Whether such avoidance is truly healthy, though, is questionable. Of course, grief isn't depressing and bleak all the time. Remembering those that have passed can be positive too. However, sometimes it can be sad. For those times, speaking about it could be so helpful. It certainly seems the better option to repressing it all. But for that, we need a change in our culture that treats grief as a taboo subject and actually starts talking about it in all its forms more. Many people have started calling for better bereavement support across the board. Some places have even gone and already implemented changes in their organisations and workplaces. However, to truly break a taboo needs even more, and maybe we can all play a part in that change, one word at a time. That article was by Daniela Tease.
From the Herald, Tuesday the 6th of June 2023, from the news section. Ferries. Glen Sannox could sail today, says Ferguson Marine boss. By Jodie Harrison. The boss of Ferguson Marine has said that the hugely delayed ferry, Glen Sannox, is ready to sail today if it had the proper certification. David Tideman said the vessel was working and that operationally everything was in place to take the ferry down the River Clyde. The ferry and its sister ship, known as Hull 802, are more than 5 years late and £500 million over budget, and remain at their construction yard Ferguson Marine LTC in Port Glasgow. But Mr. Tideman believes the day when Glen Sannox is pressed into service is fast approaching as work continues apace to get it shipshape. Yesterday, the wheelhouse of Hull 802 was lowered into place, completing another milestone on its journey towards seaworthiness. Speaking to the BBC, Mr. Tideman said that the construction of the Glen Sannox had been more like a conversion process than a straightforward build. He said, "We've done a lot of rework on this ship. We've taken pipe work out that was put in place with the wrong materials. This building of Glen Sannox has been more like a conversion project of an existing ship." He added, "Everything is working. You could take this ship down the river. We haven't got our final certificates yet, so it wouldn't be legal. But operationally, rudders are working, steering gear is working. We can run the ship from here, we can start, stop engines, we can turn her left and right, we can speed up, slow down. She's working." The vehicle is due to start harbour and sea trials this summer, with a handover to Calmac scheduled for between late autumn and Christmas. It should start sailing the route to Arran next spring. The as-yet-unnamed Hull 802 is now watertight and 80% structurally complete. The hope is it will be launched at the end of November and handed over in the late summer of next year. The delays to both ships have been branded a fiasco, with wrangles over their design and financing eventually leading to the yard being nationalised. Mr. Tideman said, There was a lot of debates going on between procurement company CMEL and FMEL in the design and integrity of what is the final design specification. But I think with hindsight, everyone would agree it would have been worth spending more time getting that specification and design complete before you start welding steel. That article was by Jody Harris. From the Herald, Tuesday the 6th of June 2023, from the news section. MPs set to vote on Margaret Ferrier's suspension after shock delay. By Andrew Learmonth. MPs look set to vote on Margaret Ferrier's 30-day suspension this afternoon, paving the way for Scotland's first recall petition and a possible by-election in her Rutherglen and Hamilton West constituency. The vote was supposed to take place last month, but was pulled by the UK government at the last minute. There was speculation on social media and from other MPs at the time that some Conservatives were preparing to vote against the ban because they fear it could set a precedent if Boris Johnson is sanctioned for misleading Parliament. However, other reports suggested it was simply because there were not enough MPs in the chamber. Erskine May, the Guide to Parliamentary Procedure, states the House can only be quorate if 35 MPs are able to vote in a division. The vote on Ms Ferrier's fate comes as Labour ramps up campaigning in the seat. Shadow Business Secretary Jonathan Reynolds will join Anas Sawa to meet with firms in the South Lanarkshire constituency. They remain the only party to have selected a candidate. Modern Studies teacher Michael Shanks has been knocking doors in the area for some weeks now. The SNP has reportedly struggled with the quality of their Westminster hopefuls. Local members should have picked a candidate nearly a month ago. However, Hamza Yousaf is said to have rejected that initial shortlist. On May the 23rd, our sister title, The National, reported that three names had gone forward to members. Nearly 2 weeks later, and the party's press office is refusing to say if there is a candidate. Ms Ferrier's lengthy punishment was recommended because of her rule breaches at the height of lockdown. Her appeal was knocked back, with the independent experts panel saying the former NP politician had acted with blatant and deliberate dishonest intent. They said she had also acted with a high degree of recklessness to the public and to colleagues, and acted selfishly, putting her own interests above the public interest. If MPs back the sanction, the Speaker will then notify the petitions officer in South Lanarkshire, who will then, in 10 working days, open a recall petition with signing stations opening across the constituency. If, over the course of 6 weeks, 10% of her constituents add their name to the petition, Ms Ferrier will lose her job, triggering a by-election. The SNP has confirmed that they will officially campaign for voters to sign the petition. Under the Recall Act 2015, parties, organisations and individuals can register with the petitions officer and spend up to £10,000 on the petition. The recall petition could be avoided if Ms Ferrier chooses to resign instead. Ms Ferrier was found guilty of culpable and reckless conduct at Sheriff Court in Glasgow last August after she admitted travelling on a train in September 2020 despite knowing she had COVID. The MP also spoke in the House of Commons and visited a number of locations in Glasgow, including a mass in Mungo's Church and a bar in Prestwick, Ayrshire, while awaiting the results of a COVID test. After the positive result came through, she lied to colleagues and said she had to go home to visit a sick relative. She was ordered to carry out 270 hours of community service after pleading guilty to willfully exposing people to the risk of infection, illness and death. That article was by Andrew Learmonth. From the Herald, Tuesday the 6th of June 2023, from the news section. Scottish tourism sector being failed at every turn. By Katrine Bussey. The Scottish Government is being challenged to urgently produce a blueprint to help boost the country's tourism industry. Scottish Conservatives made the plea as they criticised Hamza Yousaf for appointing a Minister for Independence, but failing to have a dedicated Minister for the vital tourism sector. Tory finance spokesperson Liz Smith raised the issue ahead of a Holyrood debate on Wednesday, claiming the industry was being failed at every turn right now by the Scottish Government. Decisions on rates in Scotland have left businesses north of the border at a disadvantage compared with their UK counterparts, the Conservative MSP said. Her party will also criticise the SNP and Green administration at Holyrood for failing to deal with infrastructure issues across rural and island communities, saying problems with ferries and the lack of dualling on much of the A9 road to the Highlands have had a knock-on effect on tourism. Ms. Smith said, "The tourism sector is absolutely vital to the future growth and success of Scotland's economy. However, the industry is being failed at every turn right now by an SNP Green government who do not even have a dedicated tourism minister in place anymore, but find room for a minister for independence." She claimed the government had introduced a slew of regulations that undermine tourism businesses and saddle them with additional costs and red tape. She added, "There is an anti-business agenda running through the heart of the SNP Green coalition. They have failed to pass on 75% rates relief to our leisure, hospitality and retail businesses, which has left them at a disadvantage compared with their UK counterparts, and that impacts negatively on our tourism sector. Our rural and island communities in particular have been deeply damaged by their failures. From the ferry scandal, which has left islands without lifeline services, rowing back on promises to dual key routes and failing to deliver on their superfast broadband programme, this is a government which is not on the side of our rural areas where many of the tourism hotspots are." Ms. Smith continued, "The SNP Green government has been shortchanging the tourist industry for years. They must now urgently provide a blueprint for how they intend to repair that damage and begin by listening to the concerns of the local residents and tourism businesses that they have let down so badly." That article was by Katrine Bussey.
That concludes this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Hear and Review and tell your friends about our service.